Good morning. So thank you all for showing up this morning. I should say that this is joint work with a colleague of mine in Alaska, Jill Faudry, and we're going to talk about configurations. So what's a configuration? It's a collection of points, often in the plane, and things that we call lines, also often in the plane, that satisfy a certain incidence condition. So we have Q lines passing through every point and K points lying on each line. We call that a QK configuration. And most of the time, I'm not interested so much in how many points and how many lines that I have. I'm just interested in my incidence pattern. So I'll talk about QK configurations. But if it's necessary to say, well, I've got this many points and this many lines, I might talk about a P sub Q, N sub K configuration. So what you see up here is a configuration. It's a 3-4 configuration. There are three lines passing through every point. Hopefully you can see all of the colors well enough. And there are four points lying on each line. And it's pretty. It's got nice symmetry. Sometimes I'm going to be interested in configurations, lots of times I'm interested in configurations, where I've got the same number of points passing through each line, same number of lines passing through each point, as I have points lying on each line, and I'll just call that a K configuration, because in that case you have the same number of points as lines. When people are studying configurations, they might be interested in purely combinatorial configurations. Here's a combinatorial configuration with 9 points and 9 lines, 3 points on every line, 3 lines passing through every point. You might be interested in topological configurations, where your lines are allowed to wiggle around a little bit, but still behave like lines and how they intersect. Later today, we're going to be hearing about configurations where the lines actually wiggle around quite a lot more, so they're not quite topological lines. But what I'm going to be interested in talking about today is geometric configurations. My lines are actually straight lines in the Euclidean plane. My points are actually points in the Euclidean plane. Fundamentally, we'd like to classify all configurations. Well, we can't do that. That's really hard. So we want to impose some restrictions on the questions we're asking. And the kind of restrictions I like to impose are, let's construct geometric configurations with high degrees of symmetry. So I'm going to talk about symmetric configurations. When I talk about symmetric configurations, I mean geometric configurations with symmetry, rotations, reflections of the plane that map the configuration to itself. You might have chiral symmetry, purely rotational symmetry. You might have dihedral symmetry. Here you can see a mirror of the configuration will interchange color classes. So if we don't pay any attention to color, we think about this as having dihedral symmetry. So that's one way you can classify configurations. What kind of symmetry do they have? Another way you can classify configurations is by how many symmetry classes do they have. Once you impose some symmetry restrictions, you construct symmetry classes. And we're going to say a configuration is H1, H2, astral if it has H1 symmetry classes of lines and H2 symmetry classes of points. So the configuration you're looking at right now has 5 symmetry classes of points, distinguished by color, and 6 symmetry classes of lines. So it would be 6-5 astral. Again, we're often interested in the case where you have the same number of symmetry classes of points and lines. We'll call that H astral. And this is a 3-astral-4 configuration. Every line has 4 points on it, every point has 4 lines on it, and there are 3 symmetry classes of points, colored red, green, and blue, and 3 symmetry classes of lines, again, colored red, green, and blue. And sometimes I'll talk about astral configurations. This was sort of the first, one of the first terms that was introduced in the classification of symmetric configurations. And astral means that a configuration has as few symmetry classes as possible, so as much symmetry as possible. In the case of 3 and 4 configurations, it means it has 2 symmetry classes of points and lines. In the case of 5 and 6 configurations, it would mean it has 3 symmetry classes of points and lines. And in general, it has roughly half as many symmetry classes as you have incidences, points per line or lines per point. You've got to be a little bit careful if you've got an odd number of points on every line. If you're interested in learning about geometric configurations, this is the reference for you, Branko Grunbaum's book that came out a couple of years ago. It's a great book. It's got lots of beautiful color pictures in it. You should all own a copy. So what do we know? Well, in terms of three configurations, there are a lot of classes of configurations that are known. There are several kinds of astral three configurations. These are two small examples, one with chiral symmetry and one with dihedral symmetry, two symmetry classes of points and lines. There was a paper in 2003 by Bobin and Pozanski that classified it some other three configurations and did some algebraic analysis. Here's a multilateral three configuration. It's a three astral configuration, three symmetry classes of points and lines, which you can see very nicely there with rotational symmetry, and a lot more classes of geometric three configurations are known. Four configurations we also know quite a bit. There's a large class of configurations which are sometimes called celestial configurations, four configurations. These are two examples, this very nice structure. You can have as many symmetry classes as you'd like, but they're still very symmetric, and they're well understood. There's a correspondence between a particular symbol for these celestial configurations, some algebraic rules. Somebody gives you a symbol, you can check, is this a valid symbol? If it's a valid symbol, it gives you rules for constructing these celestial configurations. So we've got a lot of examples of celestial four configurations, and there are a number of other examples known of geometric four configurations. Something that's sort of interesting in the story of configurations is the first picture of a four configuration appeared in the literature in 1980. So that's very recent. Well, there's been a lot of work since then, but many people studied configurations, three configurations primarily, since like the late 1800s, but still there was no picture of a four configuration until Branko published a picture of a 21 sub 4. It turns out to be a celestial 21 sub 4 configuration in 1980. So that's always kind of strange. Okay, so three and four configurations, we have lots of examples, we have lots of infinite families of these configurations. So what about more highly incident configurations? What about configurations where you have 5 points on every line, 5 lines through every point? Are there any? Well, it turns out there are some. Are there any with symmetry? Well, it turns out there are some of those too. Here's the smallest known example of a 5 configuration with 48 points and lines. And it turns out that you construct it by taking two nice four configurations, in fact, these celestial four configurations, stacking them one on top of each other in just the right way, and everything works. And you can construct a 5 configuration. In fact, you can construct an infinite family of 5 configurations. But we only know one infinite family of 5 configurations. That's sort of weird. What about 6 configurations? Well, are there any? Yes, there are. But again, not very much is known. This is one example of a 4 astral 6 configuration, 4 symmetry classes of points and lines, 6 points on every line, 6 lines through every point. And there are 3 configurations that are known that look kind of like this. There might be a couple more. I don't think so. But basically, these are sporadic. We do know one infinite family of 6 configurations with 10 symmetry classes of points and lines. So these are reasonably large, but still fairly tractable. This is the smallest known example with 110 points and lines. There are a few other classes of configurations known that can get highly incident. There are floral configurations that get very complicated. And it turns out that this 6 configuration is a member of an infinite class of 2s, 2t configurations, so configurations with any even number of points per line and any even number of points per line and any other even number of lines per point. And there's an inductive process, iterative process, that you can use to construct these. So that's kind of nice. And that's everything that I know. I think it's everything that is known, pretty much, about symmetric highly incident configurations. So not very much is known about symmetric highly incident configurations. We don't have very many examples. And the examples that we have are sort of complicated. There are a few ways to construct non-symmetric highly incident configurations. You take something that's high-dimensional and you connect things up and you project down into two-space and you get something that's a configuration and it's not intelligible, for the most part. So we got some open questions. What do we want to do? It would be nice to have more infinite classes of highly incident configurations. In particular, it would be nice to have any symmetric seven configurations. In particular, any infinite classes of highly incident configurations for odd k. The only ones we have is this one infinite class of five configurations. All of the 2s, 2t configurations that I just mentioned, if s and t are equal, then you can talk about 2k configurations. The sixth configuration was an example. All of these had dihedral symmetry. So there's a question. Are there any six configurations with chiral symmetry? It's a good question. Yes, there are, and I'm going to tell you about them. So I found a new construction that lets us construct configurations, highly incident configurations, for any k. This construction arose when I was analyzing this particular configuration. So this is a 20 sub 4 configuration that Branco found 2007, 2008, round about there. And at 20 points, 20 lines, you've got this nice five-fold dihedral symmetry. And this configuration was really exciting when it was found because for quite a while, there had been a conjecture that said there are no four configurations with fewer than 21 points and lines. We knew this 21 sub 4 configuration. Nobody could find anything smaller. So clearly, let's make a conjecture that there isn't anything smaller. And then Branco found this one. Very exciting. So the conjecture was false. Here's this very nice 20 sub 4 configuration. And then pretty soon there was a conjecture saying there was nothing smaller. And then pretty soon there was, by using a whole bunch of let's analyze all possible oriented matroids, Bukowski and Larcheva found, Jürgen Bukowski and Larcheva found a 18 sub 4 configuration, which you can't draw symmetrically in the Euclidean plane. And that really is the smallest. So the story of four configurations is now understood. But this is still a really nice 20 sub 4 configuration. And I was trying to figure out, okay, here's this picture. How can I draw it? And you notice that this looks like, well, some of those points maybe look like they're not really quite on the lines, because Branco's approach is to draw it in this ancient copy of MacDraw and sort of put the points on and yeah, it looks good. How can we prove that it actually works? And how can I draw it so it looks nice? So he said in this paper, what he was doing was he was looking at two 10 sub 3 configurations. And if you just take these 10 sub 3 configurations and just put them together in the right way, then you can combine them and all the incidences work. So there you go. You take the black configuration, the red configuration, you superimpose them. If you've chosen the black configuration and the red configuration in just the right way, you get black points on red lines and red points on black lines. Yes? They are not the Dazard configuration. Yeah. As far as I know, the Dazard configuration doesn't have a particularly pretty embedding using straight lines. I mean, you can draw it, but not with nice symmetry, I don't think. Okay, so how do we construct those configurations? We're going to need two pieces of terminology. If I have a regular convex m-gon of points, I can talk about a span A line, which means I'm going to start at a certain point, I'm going to walk over A point cyclically in my m-gon, and I'm going to connect up. So this is a span 3 line, start at there, 1, 2, 3. And I'm also going to talk about a span 3 circumcircle. Uses the same endpoints as my span 3 line, but it also goes through the center of my polygon. There's a method you can use to construct configurations with chiral symmetry. I call it the configuration construction lemma, and it says, start with a regular m-gon of points, and I'm going to label these points cyclically, v0, v1, v2, all the way around. Draw any line through v0, and take a circumcircle of span b. In this case, b is 3. That circumcircle, as long as you're not starting at one of the endpoints of the line, as long as you choose a reasonable point, that circumcircle is going to intersect your line. Take the intersection point, call it w0, spin it around, and connect these new points, v0, and in this case v3, with a span 3 line. Remember, we started with a span 3 circumcircle, now we're using a span 3 line, and it turns out you can use some basic Euclidean geometry to prove that the span 3 line that you just constructed, this turquoise line, goes through one of the original black points. And in fact, it goes through the original black point that the circumcircle started at. So we can complete that construction, and what you notice is that the turquoise line has 3 points on it. Now, this isn't a configuration because the red line that I started with was an arbitrary red line. I didn't happen to choose it so that it went through 2 black points. But if I'd happened to choose it so it went through 2 black points, then what I would get when I apply this configuration construction lemma is an astral 3 configuration, a 3 configuration with 2 points on every line and 2 lines passing through every point. A 3 configuration with 3 points on every line and 3 lines passing through every point, and 2 symmetry classes of points and lines. There's my 2. So here's one based on the 9-gon and the span 3 circumcircle that we were just looking at. Over here, you see a configuration which you might have seen previously in this talk. That looks an awful lot like one of the component configurations in Branco's 20-sub-4 configuration. Aha! So maybe we can use the circumcircle construction idea to construct the 20-sub-4 configuration. What happens if we try to do this circumcircle construction lemma twice on my 5-gon? Well, I get a 3 configuration over here. I get a 3 configuration over here. If I superimpose them, that's starting to look an awful lot like that 20-sub-4 configuration. But we need another class of points. Well, let's put another class of points in. Spin it around. And what you notice is the green points that we introduced, if we take a span 2 line, a particular span 2 line, you happen to get the green line going through one red point and one blue point. Isn't that interesting? It turns out it generalizes. It's not special to this 5-gon that we started with. So in general, if we want to construct a 4 configuration, start with any m-gon and a line of a certain span that you get to choose. We'll call it a span A line. In this case, A is 3. And we're going to draw 2 circumcircles. There they are. Choose one of the 2 intersection points of the line and the circumcircles. You get to choose. Spin those points around. That'll give you symmetry classes of points. Draw span B lines, where B here is the same as the span of the circumcircle that you chose. And take the intersection of those thick lines. Those are the zeroth lines that we drew. Take their intersection. And it turns out, by which I mean there's a theorem, that says when you draw the line of span A now with respect to this fourth set of points, it passes through 2 blue points. So it passes through a blue point of each of the blue colors and 2 red points because it's a span A line. Yeah. Does it ever hit the black point? The fifth blue one. Not on purpose. So something that's, I don't know how to say in these configurations, you often get very, very close misses. So it doesn't actually pass through that blue point. There may be some cases where you've chosen M in such a way and you've chosen your spans in such a way that you get unintended incidences. That's certainly possible. Here, it doesn't actually go through that blue point. But we're guaranteed that it goes through the other two blue points. And, oh, I completed the configuration. There you go. That's a very nice for configuration. Okay, so you get something nice with two. What happens if you use three circumcircle intersections? What happens if you use five circumcircle intersections, if you've got a big enough M that you can draw those circumcircles? How does the construction work? So what I'm going to walk through now is roughly how this construction works. If you give me discrete parameters A and B, these are going to control the various spans of some lines, and a collection of discrete parameters D1 through D(k-2), these are going to control how many circumcircles I'm constructing and where they start, then I can complete this base setup to a K configuration, which is going to have quite a lot of symmetry classes of points and lines. So if I want a 4 configuration, it turns out I can construct a 4 configuration with 4 symmetry classes of points and lines, but if I want a 6 configuration, then I'm going to have 16 symmetry classes of points and lines. So these configurations that we're going to construct are not very small. But we can do them, and they're going to have beautiful symmetry. And except for possibly somebody needs to hand me a starting M-gon, the construction is entirely straight edge and compass. All I'm constructing is circumcircles and lines and intersections of lines. So, you know, I can't construct a 9-gon. But if you hand me a 9-gon, I'm good. Okay. I'm going to construct symmetry classes of points and lines. Each symmetry class is going to be indexed by a particular subset of that list of discrete parameters. I had k-2 discrete parameters D1 through dk-2, which had to do with the circumcircles. Every subset, including the empty set, is going to correspond to a symmetry class of points and a symmetry class of lines, and it's going to be clear exactly how you construct each of the symmetry classes. The empty set indexed symmetry classes are start with a regular M-gon and choose a line of construct a line of span A. So the beginning regular M-gon is my empty set indexed set of points, which I'm just going to call plain old V, and the span in this case 5. Oh, look, it says down here A is 5. The span 5 lines are my empty set indexed class of lines. Construct a circumcircle, and the circumcircle is going to pass through V sub D1 is my V1 points. Since D2 is 3, it's going to pass through V3, my second circumcircle, and then D3 is 4, so I'm going to construct a circumcircle that starts at V4. The same span of all of them, some span I've chosen, span B, and choose an intersection point with line L0. That's going to be the zeroth point of my vertex classes that are indexed by a singleton subset, V1, V2, and V3. And then these are cyclically labeled V1-0, V1-1, V1-2, all the way around when I spin them around. Using these, construct span B lines. There we go. And those span B lines are my line classes that are indexed by singleton subsets. So now we've got our setup. Now there's some sort of inductive process. Each subset, in this case, we have three discrete parameters, D1, D2, and D3 we're using. So each subset of 1, 2, 3 is supposed to correspond to a symmetry class of points and a symmetry class of lines. So if we look at the subset 1, 3, How do we come up with the vertex class indexed by 1, 3? Well, we take line 1 and line 3, we take their intersection, there it is, and call that V13. Construct the lines of span A, we're going to alternate A and B, and that's going to be the zeroth element of the line class 1, 3. And what do we notice about this? It passes through two blue points. In fact, it passes through exactly the blue points V1 sub D3 and V3 sub D1. So there's some sort of interaction between what's missing in the index of the blue points and the parameter that we used to construct that circumcircle. And we're counting, sure enough, that's D3 was 4, and that's 4 over from the 0th dark blue point, and D1 is 1, and that big blue point is 1 over from the 0th light blue point. So you can construct the V12, the V13, and the V23, all of the vertices indexed by a subset of size 2. Now we need to construct the vertices indexed by a subset of size 3, which is the whole class. And so we construct the vertices indexed by the two subsets. We construct the lines indexed by the two subsets. And if we zoom in a little bit, what we notice is those three lines intersect in a single point. It looks like the black line goes through it also, but it doesn't. This is another near miss. But the yellow, orange, and red lines do go through the same point. We call that point V123. And if you construct the line of span, now V123 is a set of size 3, so we're going to use B. If we construct the line of span B with respect to these new points, the green points, sure enough, they go through one of each of the previously determined color classes. And in fact, they go through a totally determined element of each of the previously determined color classes, and it has to do with the subset that's the index set on the previously defined classes and the parameter for the circumcircle. So there's this very nice relationship. So what do I have to show that this construction works? Well, I have to show if I'm out at some subset sigma, say we've got a really large class of discrete parameters D1 through DK minus 2, maybe I'm looking at the subset 1, 2, 4, 7. I need to show that the previously defined line classes 1, 2, 4, 1, 2, 7, 1, 4, 7, and 2, 4, 7, all of the three subsets that are subsets of this 4 subset, I need to show all those lines intersect in a single point. And that's going to show that the vertices, the vertex classes, are well-defined. And I need to show, well, the line classes, once I've got the vertex classes defined, it's not a problem to define the line classes. They're just lines of a certain span. So that's easy. But what I need to show is that, in fact, those line classes intersect the previously defined vertex classes. So if I look at line 1, 2, 4, 7, I need to show that it passes through one of the vertices V124, one of the vertices V127, one of the vertices labeled V147, and one of the vertices labeled V247, and I'm claiming that I know exactly which vertices it's supposed to go through because of the discrete parameters DI. So that's what needs to happen in order to show that this is a valid construction. I'm not going to prove this. It's some not terribly interesting plain old basic Euclidean geometry. The idea essentially is that these various points that you're constructing turn out to be concyclic, and then you can use facts about cyclic quadrilaterals to show that various things line up. So this is a picture of what you might need to show that the vertices are well-defined, and a picture of what you might need to show that the lines pass through the points that they're supposed to pass through, and you can see that it's plausible there's a bunch of angle chasing. But again, it's a purely let's do some Euclidean geometry kind of proof. If we think about what we've just constructed, in terms of the incidence count, well, take a vertex V sigma. What's it going to be incident with in terms of how many lines? Well, there, if sigma is size n, then there are n lines, one for each of the elements of sigma that you're deleting, that were old lines that have to intersect at V sigma. So V sigma has n old lines that are passing through it. It's got n new lines that are emanating from it when you're constructing all the subsequent lines that come back and intersect V sigma. And it's got the two lines that are L sigma because you've got two lines of this span that go through it. So we've got n lines plus k minus 2 minus n new lines plus the lines that are indexed by sigma. If you count it up, you get k total lines passing through every vertex. If you play the same game with the lines, you've got n previously defined vertices that it's intersecting from the previously defined vertex classes. You've got the two vertices that you get when it's a span something or other line, span A line or span B line, and then you've got the subsequent vertices that lie on it. You count up your incidences, you in fact get k lines, k vertices lying on each line. So, how exciting. It's a k configuration. One symmetry class per subset means exactly that we have 2 to the k minus 2 symmetry classes total. And these get complicated. But they're symmetric, and they're pretty. Here are some. K equals 4 are really very understandable. They all have 4 symmetry classes of points and lines. Interestingly, depending on how you choose your circumcircles, you can get configurations with dihedral symmetry. You can get configurations with purely chiral symmetry. K equals 5. Now you're looking at, let's see, this is a 96 sub 5 configuration, I think. So 8 symmetry classes is still reasonably tractable, but getting pretty complicated. This is totally not intelligible, but it's kind of pretty. K equals 6. K equals 7. But what this does give us is an infinite class of symmetric 7 configurations. They're large, but hey. This is still a project that we're sort of working on. We know, so what are you allowed to put in for your D sub I and your A and your B? If M is even, A and B can't be half of M, so we restrict A and B to be strictly between 1 and M over 2. You can't have your D sub I's be 0 or A or B or A plus B because then you get too many incidences and things don't work out. It turns out that there are other constraints that we don't understand yet. You can't just put in any constraints on the DI, but we don't know what the constraints are yet. Occasionally, especially if 6 divides M, you do this construction, and you accidentally end up with a more symmetric configuration. So you can do this construction and accidentally end up with an astral 4 configuration, which would have only 2 symmetry classes of points, so you get extra incidences. So there's still some things we don't quite understand. Minimum values for these K configurations, the 20 sub 4 configuration that we started with is the smallest 4 configuration that you can construct with this construction technique. And you can construct it with, you can construct a 3 configuration starting with a 5-gon as well, simply only use one circumcircle. We saw an example of that. It turns out that for K equals 5 and K equals 6, that the smallest M you can use, the smallest starting polygon, is a 7-gon. everything works out, but it's totally not intelligible. These points in the center, if you're starting with, say, a unit circle for where the outside points are, the points in the center are very, very close to the origin, and it's very hard to disambiguate the points. We can zoom in a little bit, and you get some spread here, but you've still got this clutter in the middle. The red point, that red thing is actually 7 separate points. We can keep zooming in. Oh, you see some separation now. There are actually 2 symmetry classes of points right there. I can see them because I'm really close. They're actually separate. But these things are really, really tight. We can zoom in a little more if you want. So even though this is a perfectly nice configuration combinatorially, even geometrically, it's hard for us to understand. But it's there. It's the smallest, 112 points, 112 lines, which raises the question, well, how good is this construction? It's great for 4 configurations. It gives you the minimal geometric configuration in the Euclidean plane that's actually symmetric in the Euclidean plane. You don't have to go to the extended Euclidean plane. It's not minimal for 5 configurations. The example that we saw a while ago with 48 points and lines does better than the example you can construct with a 7-gon. It's not minimal for 6 configurations either. It misses by 2 points and 2 lines. But it's pretty small. It is minimal for 7 configurations because we don't know any other symmetric 7 configurations, so it's good. But it's actually considerably better than the other 7 configurations that were known. I think the smallest on the page of ad hoc constructions for 7 configurations was on the order of 800 points and lines, and this one's a little under 300. And it's not minimal for 8 configurations. And in fact, it's not going to be minimal for even configurations because there's this other class of even K configurations that I know how to construct that's smaller. What can we say about its structure? Well, if you have a configuration of points and lines, you can associate to it a graph theoretic object called a Levy graph by saying, let's take every point and every line and associate a node on a graph somewhere. So we're going to construct a bipartite graph. The nodes of the graph are the points and lines of the configuration, and we're going to connect 2 nodes of the graph if and only if the corresponding geometric objects are incident. So take this nice 3 configuration, and there is a not particularly nice drawing of the associated Levy graph. And if you've got a configuration with a large number of points and lines, you're going to have a Levy graph with twice that large number of points and lines as nodes. But if your original geometric drawing has a lot of symmetry, then you can reduce the Levy graph by essentially quotienting out by the symmetries to get something that sometimes is called a voltage graph or a reduced Levy graph. So the labels on the voltage graph tell you exactly how you should connect up elements of the symmetry classes in the original configuration. If we look at the voltage graphs associated with this new construction that I just described, you get some very pretty objects. The astral 3 configurations, these 3 configurations here, you get a square with some doubled edges. K equals 4, you get the graph of a cube with some double edges. K equals 5, you get a graph of a 4 cube with some doubled edges. And in general, if you take the K configuration that you construct with this method, you're going to get as a voltage graph a K minus 1 cube. And the idea is it's like that inductive proof that you've got 2 to the n symmetry class, you've got 2 to the n subsets of an n set. You construct the voltage graph for the configuration minus one of your discrete parameters. Take that voltage graph, duplicate it, shoving in your extra index, your 3, for example. You get the same connections on that duplication, and then you connect across in a prescribed way. So, very nice structure for the voltage graphs. So where do we go next? Well, clearly there's some more work that needs to be done on the specifics of this construction, hammering out exactly what discrete parameters work and what you can say, you know, for what discrete parameters do you get chiral symmetry, for what discrete parameters do you get dihedral symmetry in the construction. So some technical details. There was a choice that I didn't talk about very much in terms of each circumcircle intersects the line twice. You can choose either of the intersection points. You get different configurations. Sometimes you get the same, congruent configurations sometimes. So what's the relationship between these different choices of the construction? So some more technical details on the construction. But in general, how do we find more infinite classes of highly incident configurations? So far, I know of two iterative constructions where you take well-understood small configurations, three configurations or four configurations, and you do the construction a whole bunch of times with the same starting polygon, and somehow if you do it just right, everything works and you get a large configuration. Are there more such constructions? Probably. We found two. There's probably lots. Here in this talk, we had an understood class of configurations, and we were able to look at the voltage graphs and say, ooh, these voltage graphs are really nice. Is it possible to take a nice voltage graph and go back and construct new configurations starting with the voltage graph? I'd really like to be able to do that. Seven configurations, the smallest one we know of is 288 points and lines, and it's totally not intelligible. Just like the six configuration with a seven gon was totally unintelligible, the seven configuration starting with a nine gon is equally totally intelligible in exactly the same way. The points are just smashed at the origin. Can we find smaller highly incident configurations? Or is it true that the smallest six configuration has 110 points and lines? That seems a little unlikely to me, but we don't know any smaller. So there are lots of interesting open questions having to do with highly incident symmetric configurations, and I hope that other people in this room would be interested in investigating such questions. Thank you very much.